In editing, I realized I forgot to say jobsinjapan.com is the place you got to go to find the best job in Japan. So go there. What else we got to tell you? Jobsinjapan.com is where you got to go to find your best job in Japan. Also, this show is kind of special. You'll learn why very shortly. But let me know what you think about it. Good points, bad points, what you like, okay? This show is for you in the end, so let me know what you think. Without further ado, let's get to it. Very special episode of the Inside Japan Podcast. Let's get to it.
Welcome, everyone, to your ongoing journey or a leap into a new world of opportunity. Inside Japan Podcast is a stepping stone for your next adventure. It is a show filled with informative interviews, perspectives on local life, and how you can master your path into the unknown. For today, kick back and listen to the wisdom of our host, James.
All right, guys, very special guest today. You know, we've had 500 of these, more than 500 of these episodes, and I've never had a co-host, but that is changing today with my co-host. Can you please introduce yourself, co-host?
Hello, my name is An Ming. I am a YouTuber. I have the channel Oriental Pearl, and I guess I'm moving up in the world. I'm co-host now.
There you go. So we're going to try something a little bit new on the show here. You know, I've been talking to you guys that are listening, regular listeners, for weeks about how, you know, I got to change the formula up here. In America, it's tough on the schedules and getting guests and stuff. So I thought, hey, let's try co-hosting it up. And what better option than An Ming here, who is setting the world on fire in many different ways. So for just in case, of course, you were on the show 10 months or 11 months ago. I can't remember, maybe a year ago. I'm not sure. But some people out there don't know who you are. Those people are crazy. They're few and far between. But you got to introduce us. What are you up to? What are you doing? What's your life all about, An Ming?
You're way too nice. It's been about a year since you and I talked, and a heck of a lot has changed since then. Because at that point, I was set on going back to China. And at this point, this year, oh my gosh, so much has changed. I think it's going to be Japan. I think it's going to be hard to get rid of me. I think you're stuck with me here in Japan. Well, now you've moved to America, but a lot's been going on. So I think I've decided to stay here, and I've continued to do this YouTube thing. And I never expected in a million years to become a YouTuber. I did it full time for about 8 months last year. That was pretty surreal. I can check that off my bucket list. It wasn't really on my bucket list to be a full-time YouTuber, but, I checked it off. I did that for 8 months, and now I'm just kind of uploading videos as it is, talking about Japan, talking about China, and mostly encouraging people to learn Japanese or learn another language. That's my main goal.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get a little bit of the backstory, though. So what kind of brought you to Asia in the beginning? Because it wasn't like some deep love of Japan. I know that. So what was kind of your history of why'd you come to Asia in general?
It wasn't because of a deep love of Japan. Well, that's right, because originally I went to China. I didn't know anything about Japan, and I had a lot of interest in there just from going to college in America. I was a marketing major at a little business school, and when I graduated, I just had this grand ambition. I don't know, my head was in the clouds. I'm like, I'm going to totally shock everybody and just do something off the beaten path and move to China. And I did. And after living there for so many years, I loved learning language. I loved kanji. And because of kanji, I kind of got into Japanese. And I visited Japan for the first time in 2015 after living in China for 3 years already, and loved it. Just absolutely loved it. And I was like, why don't I try living here and give it a shot? And I was here for a year. And then I came back in 2019 to do an exchange, a grad school exchange with my school in China, Fudan University, and Waseda over here. And I was only supposed to stay for a semester, and I got stuck here. So I'm just going to make Japan my new home.
Yeah. And I guess people like know your stuff. No, your Japanese is really exceptional. And to hear that you only came here the first time in 2015 has got to be shocking to some people. Some people are going to be envious of that skill. So we got to know, how were you studying in college? What was your kind of studying regimen? How'd you get so good and so fast?
I didn't study any languages except Spanish in high school. And I wasn't very good at it because I didn't try very hard. But that's a weird thing. I didn't know any foreign languages up until very, very late in college, almost almost after I graduated is when I started. So it was really late in life. I don't think I have any special talent for it. I just spent a lot of time doing it. You know, if you spend 6 hours a day doing something, you're definitely going to get good at it.
Yeah, yeah, but that's the hard part, though. Like, you make that is the easy and hard part, right? Like, it's it has to be. I always say, like, you have to have a passion for it, as in you can do it and it doesn't feel like, wow, I got to do 8 hours today of this. You can't feel like that if you're really going to get good. Would you agree with that?
Oh, I agree with that 100%. And a lot of people do these study methods, especially because I taught English here in Japan. I taught English in China as well. They'll really make it so incredibly boring to study. They'll, you know, open up a book and memorize words and do that. And that can only last for so long. I mean, that's a part of studying, but it really has to be an integrated part of your life, you know. You have to really enjoy it, make it a hobby, and try to kill two birds with one stone, like watching a movie you like in that language or reading a book you like in that language, and making friends. And that's kind of what my YouTube channel is about, because a lot of the Japanese I learned in izakaya.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or on the streets.
It's one of those things where, like, you know, people, if they can't do that, I always ask them, like, maybe learning Japanese is not for you. Because if you can't get to that headspace of, hey, I want to do this, I want to, you know, want to make the, it's not, it shouldn't even be an effort, is what I'm trying to say. You know what I mean? Like, it just should be something you want to do.
Right. It's kind of like a step-by-step process. I didn't go head in on the first day, like, I'm going to learn all this hiragana, katakana, kanji. I'm going to get up to N1, and that's my goal from day one. It was like a step-by-step thing. You just kind of have to accept it over time. Okay, I'm going to do a little more, a little more, a little more. And no, I'm going to go and do this thing, you know, hardcore. Because in the beginning, it was just a hobby for me. In the beginning, it was like, well, I learned Chinese. Chinese is my thing, but I'll learn a little Japanese for fun. And then it became much more serious after that. So it's a process, too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How long were you living in China?
I guess I lived there for a total of 6 years, and then Japan a little over 2 years now. So 8 years abroad.
Wow, yeah, 8 years. So yeah, just a little under me. I had 10 years before I moved back. So just a little under me. So yeah, that's pretty cool. And you're really it's a short amount of time. People think, you know, oh, I'll never get fluent in Japanese. It takes too long. But it really, how much you put in is how fast you get out. You know what I mean? So that's, and you're proof of that. So I do want to talk. Obviously, this is kind of a introduction to An Ming here. So I'm kind of asking the questions like a normal interview. We won't do that every week, but this week we're definitely doing that. Because I got to know, YouTube success here, that seemingly came fast for you too, right? I mean, how long did you have the channel, and how long did you start getting these thousands of millions of views?
Isn't that weird? Because I'm just a person with a GoPro camera, no filming skills, and I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just an amateur. I mean, I didn't even know how to do things like Instagram stories until really recently, and how to use equipment, how to edit things and all that. I'm totally amateur, but I think that there was a need for that, especially here in Japan, that all the YouTube videos are getting a little overproduced. I mean, they're really starting to look like National Geographic Japan, and they're kind of losing the element of, you know, everyday life, the amateur thing that is appealing on YouTube. So I kind of snuck into that niche. I saw it a long time ago because I didn't used to like YouTube. I didn't watch it, but I had seen a few videos, and the Japan ones as well, and the China ones as well. And I could see some things that viewers wanted that weren't being provided. I could see it in the comments and even just my own opinion. And I'm like, well, rather than, you know, like, you know, criticizing people for their other stuff, like, why not just go and make up for that? Like, if there's a niche, if there's a market out there to be served, then I should make my own videos. So I did. And I tried to play on everything that I thought was missing from the other people's content. And lo and behold, like, really fast, like a year after I started, or maybe less than a year, 6 or 7 months, it just took off. And it was weird because I had only 100 subscribers as of this time last year. And now there's 155,000. So that just took off really quickly.
Silver play button. But I think I'm going to put you on the spot here. I think now, maybe it became later, but I think you're a very measured kind of YouTuber, right? I think you know what you're doing about the keywords and all this stuff, right? you know what you're doing, right? Let's get straight.
I couldn't be a complete amateur, right? Well, yeah. I'm definitely an amateur with the filming aspect and the technical stuff. I have no idea what I'm doing there. But like I said, I was a marketing major, so I know a lot about how to market something, how to keep people's interest, how to entertain people, because I studied that. I studied advertising in college, and then diplomacy later on in grad school. So yeah, I did a lot of research. I like last year around this time, I was looking at all these videos on how to get big on YouTube, how to do it, how to make it. And I listened to those every single day. And then I just put that stuff into action, and somehow it worked. And I tricked everyone into thinking I know what I'm doing and I have a professional channel.
So you heard it here. That's not bullshit then. Because I always think, you know, you see those shows, like, here's the formula to how to do it. And of course, it's not a formula. You have to, you have to have the basis of content that people want to see. I mean, that's you got to have that. But a lot of people have that. But you're saying that kind of side stuff is important, kind of it's not a blueprint, but there is kind of things people say. And that's kind of, it's good to follow in your mind if you want to be a YouTuber.
Yep, absolutely. And I've done experiments with like twin videos. I'll go out to like Yokohama Chinatown and film for a whole day and come out with four videos and label them each differently and try to do different thumbnails and different marketing. And it's amazing to see the difference in views. You know, one of them will get 80,000, the other will get 1 million. And it's like, well, that was the same day. I did the same exact thing, but it's the marketing. It's how you write the titles and do the thumbnails and how you start the video off and the theme. So there's a lot that goes into it that that I think about all the time. So it's not an accident.
Yeah, it's not quite
an accident.
Amateur in filming, but not in the business side of the game for sure. I don't want to call it business side. You know what I mean? The marketing side of things is the best way to put it. I don't know. I want to dig in on this a little bit because, you know, being a YouTuber is something that, well, it's like the most common answer now when you ask a Japanese child what they want to be is a YouTuber. but more than that, a lot of foreigners come to Japan, give this a shot. You know, well, I want to make a few videos and it doesn't go anywhere. They do an apartment tour or whatever and it kind of dies. So what is your, I'm sure you've been asked this before now in your DMs 100 times, probably worse stuff than that too, but what do you get asked about?
there's some worse stuff. Like can I get some foot pictures or something?
Okay, yeah.
That's the bad side of YouTube. That's the side that the kids don't know about. Like, oh my gosh, all these weird people.
yeah. So keeping it away from that, the dark side, the light side, people might ask you to have questions for you. I'm sure you get asked stuff like, hey, I want to start a YouTube. How do you do it? What's your blanket advice? You know, what do you really give them? Don't give me the canned answer. What would you really tell someone?
You have to find a niche. I mean, by this point, it's 2021. YouTube's been out for so long and you have to be different than everybody else. You have to do something that hasn't really been done. So especially here in Japan, if you want to come to Japan and make Japan videos, like there's a million. There's a ton of channels and there's some really good ones and they've been doing it for, you know, 10 years already. So to get in at that point, you got to do something completely unique and you have to have value. You either have to be really funny or have some sort of knowledge that you're giving people, or you have to inspire people. Those are the three main things. And if you can do one of those, you can usually get the channel rolling. If you can do all of those, then it gets really big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think yours is definitely about, you know, inspiring people to, hey, I can do this too. I mean, 99.99999% of the people won't become as fluent as you, but you give a lot of people hope that they can do that. And I think that's the power of your channel. Would you agree with that?
I try to be realistic. I use really simple Japanese in the videos purposefully because I want to give people a realistic idea of what you can get to. Yeah, you can go up and order food. Yeah, you can go up and have a short conversation on the street. That's achievable. Whereas I think, you know, if you're here for a long, long time, like me, yeah, you get to the point where, well, you'd have to live here for a long, long time to be able to do that, go to Waseda or study here. But I didn't focus on that. I focused on the stuff that was more achievable, so it was relatable. And I found that the simpler Japanese I did in the videos, the more views it got, believe it or not, because people were like, oh, I recognized a few words. And then after that point, I'm like, yeah, I got to keep it really simple. So if people feel encouraged, like they could understand some of the conversation, they will watch for longer, they'll watch more. And that's good. That's what you want.
Yeah, and I think that's something to that, because when I was learning Japanese, I only got to N2 level. I failed N1. I didn't try the second time, but that was I studied hard to get that level. It was really hard for me, and I got there. I was happy. But I was the kind of person where if I heard someone speaking better Japanese than me, I was kind of like resent them a little bit. You know, you'd be like, God, I wish I was speaking that. You know, you get kind of pissed like that. And now maybe you, as someone that has mastered a language, you know, I don't think there's ever a master, you know what I'm saying? You're a very high level. Do you not have that feeling, or do you get that sometimes? Because, you know, there are people that speak better Japanese than you out there, of course. When you hear them, do you feel that kind of envy? Do you go to that kind of, you know, kind of resentment side that I get to, or do you kind of just let it go? Hey, it's a goal.
Perhaps I did in the beginning, especially with Chinese in our school, back in Harbin when I was teaching English over there. It was my first year in China, and I was getting involved in Chinese. I was going to a school, and there was a guy at our school that spoke really well. He was already the equivalent of N1 in Chinese. And yeah, I was like, man, that's cool. Like, here, I'm getting corrected, and the co-teachers will switch to English with me. They won't even let me speak full Chinese. And yeah, I felt that in the beginning, but obviously I got better. And then when it came to learning the next language, of course, starting from the bottom again is very humbling, by the way. If you get really good in one language and you start with another one, you're like, crap, I'm that dumb foreigner again. Now I don't know anything that's going on. And then when I started with Japanese, I didn't feel that envious of people that were, basically everybody was better than me at that point, because I was like, well, you know, I know the other language, so it's fine. But yeah, there can be, I've heard that, especially on YouTube with the, what they call the polyglot community. Not a polyglot, but I only speak, you know, English, Chinese, and Japanese, so I'm not one of them. But the like, I can see rivalry there, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, but those kind of feelings come out.
Yeah, because I think like people that are really, really good, they kind of just don't have that as much as they kind of just say, well, there's people better than me, and that's kind of it. I wish I had that more, because it would make me more, I don't know, a better person.
Are you a competitive person, yeah, though, James? Yes. Are you a really competitive person? Yeah. Are you a sore loser?
Yes, yes. All those things are definitely was like, you know, it was a time when I was like hardcore studying Japanese, like as much as I possibly could. Like you said, 8 hours a day. And I was like, I was loving it. I was looking forward to Sundays because I was like, I can study 10 hours a day on Sunday. And that's when I was like my strongest. And I was like, I would use that as fuel. But then when I started getting a little bit, you know, the fire kind of starts leaving you. Then it kind of turns to like, man, why can he speak better than me? Why can she speak better than me? And he kind of turns to this negative spiral where I think then you kind of put out your own fire of passion or something. You know, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, I think like it's better to have, like you said, like just to be inspired by people. That's what you do with your YouTube channel, not to be competitive about language. Because it's really something stupid to be competitive.
You can be competitive, but just like with YouTube, you need to be competitive with yourself. You're not competing against the other people. You're only competing against yourself. And it's kind of a mental game there. And it's the same with language learning. Who cares about someone at my university in Fudan who spoke better Chinese than me in the class? Like, at the end of the day, we're going to part at some point and I'm never going to see them again. And it's just, I'll realize it's a competition between me and me. Just like the YouTube channels. I mean, everyone thinks that, you know, this is the YouTube world, we're all connected, but really we're not. And we're only competing with our own performance. So it's a mental game there. You can have competition, but just compete with yourself, you know, try to do better than you did last year, or do better than you did before. And then I think that you can drive yourself that way.
There you go. That's a much better way to do it, I think. And I always have a big problem with this. And how about, I always like, hate making mistakes. So I would like really make me not try to say words.
Me
you know?
Too.
I would
James,
hate that.
James, we have so much in common. I hate that. I hate making mistakes too. I really hate it. It used to drive me nuts. And when I get corrected, I would take it to heart, but like inside, and I wouldn't get mad at the person who corrected me, but I'd get mad at myself for making that mistake. I go home and memorize it, like, I'm never going to make that mistake again. It's so embarrassing.
Yeah.
The same with the YouTube videos. If I make a mistake in Japanese, you know, the viewers will be the first ones to tell me. And, I'll memorize it. I'll never forget that mistake.
Yeah.
Even if it was small.
Do you ever have something like in the videos where you're recording, you listen back to the, you're editing or whatever, you're like, oh man, I messed up there. And do you kind of like not want to put that in there, or you put it in there to let the realness out?
I think that the conversation is pretty simple, so there's no huge mistakes, but if there's something that I catch, I'll edit it out. Usually I'll edit it out.
Oh, okay.
But if I posted it and there's a mistake that's still in there, there's very few because I've edited them out, or the parts that I know what sounds good, what doesn't sound good. And sometimes when I just go up to someone and switch from English to speaking Japanese, the accent will be off and I can hear it. So I just don't use those parts.
Yeah, you heard it here. I'm Ming fans.
Well, it's very hard to switch from language to language. Like your brain needs time to like change modes. I don't know if you get that. You have a bilingual household. Do you ever go to speak in Japanese after talking in English? It just doesn't come out right for the first minute.
Oh yeah. I said my first karaoke last week. I was like, wow, I never said that in 10 years. Karaoke. You know, it's like, I just never said that. It. Yeah. It's like, I was like, what is
when
that?
Speaking Japanese.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, what is that? Karaoke. You know, it's so crazy.
You kind of have to reset your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's been interesting. And my Japanese skill is, well, I make, you know, most of my income is from translating stuff. So I'm still like, my reading and stuff is, I'm sure, staying about the same level. But wow, speaking is taking a serious hit. So I got to do some extra stuff. But it's tough though, right? Because I don't have that drive anymore. Like, I'm not even in Japan anymore. So it's like, do I care that much? You know what I mean? Like, it's really tough. You got to have a reason to study. I think that really helps you too. But mine kind of left.
Well, if your wife speaks English, then I could see, just falling into a routine of speaking English. And that's what happens to a lot of people that come here as well. Even if they're living in Japan, if their spouse speaks English, then, you know, they just kind of get comfortable with speaking English in the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. But it's good. Oh, I want to, last question about YouTube, this YouTube train. I've been interesting stuff here, so I want to kept going on for a while. But I want to know about, like, this kind of video where, these things are huge. I mean, some of the videos you do, like, you know, American Girl Speaks Perfect Japanese and stuff. Like, where does that?
I never said that.
You know what I'm saying? That kind of thing.
Never said my Japanese was perfect.
That kind of thing where, you know, what should I say? Fluent, maybe? You know what I'm saying? That kind of video. I'm not saying anything negative about it, but like, what's your future plan, right? Because, like, I mean, can you just do that? I mean, what's your like? I'm sure you have a plan because you're a very planned person. We learned today. What's your kind of future plan for the channel, right? Any kind of things you can share with that?
Well, initially, I wanted my channel to be kind of a counter to that trend that was going on. You know, white girl, white guy speaks flawless Chinese, and it's not flawless. And I said that in a video, and I pointed that out. I had a conversation with another YouTuber where we talked about that kind of hustle, especially with a lot of channels that were claiming they learned the language in 30 days or something. So I always wanted to bring that back down a little bit, especially get away from some of those words like white girl. I'm not calling myself a white girl. Yeah. And I don't like when other people call me that or break it down to that. You know what? Those are not really sustainable in the long term unless you're just going to dabble in a whole bunch of languages and pretend you're fluent in every single one of them. I know two foreign languages, so that's about my limit. Although I'm interested in Korean, so maybe I could do that. But just doing those, you know, shocking people videos is not sustainable. But I don't have every single video that's about that topic, and I'm trying to branch out more and more, having conversations and also showing life here, because my main goal was just to kind of show another perspective of life here in Japan. So I think the street talks are pretty good. Going out, finding a little glimpse of Japanese culture, like Beigoma or something, you know, the tops game that they play, or showing the Jinrikisha guys, the pull cart guys, and, you know, capitalizing on the niches that were missed by the other YouTubers, because this is a very saturated market, but they didn't get everything.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
They got the vending machines good. They got Disney really good. Definitely don't need to do those topics again, but there's a lot that other people missed. And that's what I'm going to try to do in the future, is just a slice of life. Going to Japanese people's houses, hanging out, doing stuff that you don't see on the other channels.
There you go. It sounds like you got it all planned out, like I expected. You're very, You are on top of it for sure. To change topics a little bit, though, all over the world, coronavirus, obviously. You live in Tokyo, I know, so unless I'm wrong about that, but I think you live in Tokyo. So, how are things going? Lockdown. People say lockdown means nothing in Japan. True or false? An Ming, let us know.
Well, that's true, especially now, the second time. So what, you're in the United States. I mean, that's got to be more lockdown. What state are you in right now, James?
I'm in South Carolina. And yeah, lockdown here, but it's actually not lockdown now. They're out of lockdown. But what I was surprised when I first got to America is businesses really make the rules here very clear. You stand here, you stand here. There's people at the door watching if you have a mask or not. And I always read the news articles like people in America don't care. Uh-huh. Like, I think people don't care, but the businesses make them care because they get fined seriously if they break the rules. Like it's a real, if your business is following the rules, you get fined. So every business is like, all right, we got to do it, you know?
Wow. Yeah. That's quite different than here in Tokyo. There's a second lock. It's not a lockdown though. It's a emergency declaration, and it basically means that the biggest thing that changed is bars and restaurants are supposed to close by 8 p.m. But I work in the Ikebukuro area right now, and I'll tell you, yeah, a lot of them don't, and they don't want to comply, and they know it. They know if they do, they might go under. So, it's nothing's really changed much in the second, you know, emergency declaration. I think the biggest thing that came out of that is people didn't go anywhere for this three-day holiday weekend, just this last weekend, but not much. People are pretty fatigued here. I mean, people say Japanese always follow the rules, and they're super, you know, strict about stuff. And well, in this case, no. In this case, they're pretty fatigued because unlike you guys in America living the high life, everybody's in a tiny, cramped little apartment here, and I'm in a room with no windows, and yeah, I don't want to stay in here all day. That's torture. It's way too small.
Yeah, yeah.
You got a yard stuff, James. You live in the high life over there.
Front yard, backyard, central air. We're in heaven, right?
Oh, gosh.
What else do you need? But we got to hear that. We got to get an Instagram post about that apartment, too. We got to see that. But anyways.
It's bad.
We got to know about, I did want, again, I'm changing topics like a madman today, but I want to know about, because if you are a YouTuber, I'll maybe edit this through in the beginning. If you are a YouTuber, you got to worry about the visa, right? So what's your visa situation? How are you figuring that out? Because that's a big problem. People ask me about, how can I get a visa? I want to be a YouTuber. How do you do it? You got to get a second job, I guess?
That's a great question. My situation was kind of strange. And, you know, the last time we talked, and I think the reason that you found my channel was I did a video about teaching English and how I'm not going to go back to it. Well,
you're right. That's it.
I came to a point where I was waiting and waiting and waiting for the situation to change for China to let international students back in, and they never did. And I found it very cruel. So that really changed my opinion on how I felt about China. But that's another story. And by September, I realized, or by the beginning of August, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to run out of time here. I'm going to overstay my extension on my extension and then get in trouble. You don't want to get in trouble with overstaying your visa here in Japan because they can ban you for, what is it, like 5 years? You can't come back for 5 years. Yeah, that's serious stuff. So I didn't want to mess that up. And that was the easy route. I wanted to just, I got to get a visa. I got to do something about this. I'm going to get kicked out. I don't want to go back to America. I definitely didn't need the money. I mean, 2020 was a very hard year for me in every single way, except financially, because luckily I had the YouTube channel. And thanks to that, I paid off all my college debt. So that was really wonderful. But the visa thing, I took the job teaching English. I took one originally, stayed for 3 days because it was teaching kids, and I quit on the third day. like, forget this. I'd rather just go back to America at this point. It's like torture. And I wanted to get a job that made me work as few hours as possible. So I ended up going to this very small Eikaiwa no Gakko, conversation school. And I know that they don't work a lot of hours, so that was perfect. I know the people there, it was kind of the running joke. They're like, yeah, you know, I know why you want this job. Like, you don't really care about working. And yeah, but I'm friendly with the people there. It's kind of a running joke. Like, you know, we know what you're doing here. You didn't want, you know, you're not really here to teach English, are you? You just, but I'm friendly with them, so it was fine. Yeah, but I ended up getting a visa through them temporarily. But I'm thinking starting from next month, since I'm really kind of giving up on China here, I think I'm going to look for a marketing job here in Japan.
Oh, there you go. Change tracks. That's some good,
Yeah,
I think that would be interesting YouTube videos. I don't know about how some of the audience might take those, but I think it'd be cool to hear about that. But I want to know about, you know, how about self-sponsor, right? I mean, that's a possibility. I know it's the stakes are high and the requirements are high, but have you ever looked into that?
Oh, yeah, I do sponsored videos now.
I'm sorry. Self-sponsor for Visa.
Oh, self-sponsored.
Yes, that's possible. If you make enough dough, they'll give you the self-sponsor.
Hey, you know what's easier? Just marry a local.
That's what I did. Yeah.
I haven't thought about the self-sponsoring thing. That sounds really difficult. My ambition is not to be a full-time YouTuber. I could do it. I could definitely do it financially at this point. But I don't want to do that. I spent way too much time in school. Like, we're talking about grad school and undergrad and all this. And to do YouTube full time, I feel kind of a little empty about that.
Oh, really? Look, you have the golden ticket so many want, but she doesn't want it. The drama.
No, I'm going to keep it as a thing. But that doesn't mean I have to quit everything else to do
it. Yeah, that's true.
You know?
That's cool.
But yeah, self-sponsorship sounds too complicated. I'm going to take the easy route.
Yeah. The requirements are off. It's really insane, too. And you have to have a certain amount in the bank. It's all this crazy stuff. Yeah, better you don't do it. Keep your situation you have now. It's rolling well for you. And that'll be cool to hear if you take on that job hunt for marketing. That'd be pretty cool. And you're in the right place. I mean, if you want to find jobs that aren't teaching, Tokyo is the place to be. But I want to know,
exactly.
Because you kind of knew these people, so that was kind of a little in that others don't have. But what's the job market like in Tokyo for foreigners to find an English job? Because, I mean, I guess Corona makes it's pretty hot market because, you know, no new people can come in. But maybe I'm wrong about that. How was the job market there for foreigners that wanted to teach English, I mean?
At the point where I started looking in August, you're right, no foreigners could come in. They were completely blocked out until October 1st. But after that point, then they started letting people come over here. But it seems like a lot of the schools are going under, especially the Eikaiwa route. Yeah, a lot of them are going under. They're not doing well. Not doing well, and they're not hiring so much. But there are still jobs because places like Nova and GABA and Aeon, what is it, Aeon, they're hiring still. But what's shocking about comparing jobs in China to jobs in Japan is when I applied to jobs in China back in the day, I had never been rejected from a job ever. Like, you go to the interview, it's not an interview. It's just like, so when can you start? You're a living, breathing, English speaking person. When can you start? But here in Japan, like, they actually reject people. I found that kind of shocking. Like, wait, you guys have standards and stuff. Like, you can't just, it's a lot harder to get an English teaching job here compared to some of the other Asian countries, believe it or not, as much as people like to look down on English teachers here.
Yeah. I mean, well, in the golden age, it was like that, where you could just, oh, foreigner in Japan, you got a job. But now, of course, it's way different because it's such a hot spot foreigners want to go still. But I guess, yeah, I think we could gab on forever. But I want to get to this question to kind of wrap up this first episode here with Amin. She's coming back, though. Don't worry. We've got at least a second episode with her later this month. But here's the question of the week I got in my email. I scoured my email for the best question to ask you, someone that... you know, your pulse is on Japan here. So here's the question. Guy was 44 years old. He asked, hey, is it too late for me to work in Japan? I have a degree. Don't worry about degree. So he got a degree. He can get a visa in theory. He is Japanese at the N3 level. 44 years old. Japanese is N3. What are his options to work in Japan? Anming, you go first.
I don't think it's too late at 44. Now, if you had said 64, I would say, yeah, 44 is not too late, especially with the ability to speak Japanese and all that. And he should be golden. I think that he has chance. I think there's hope, lots of hope.
Okay, so I'm taking the good cop role here. I'll take the bad cop role and say, It depends on your family situation, right? Because if you're 44 and supporting a family which would be an entry level job. I mean, let's face it. If you're going to go to Japan with N3, your Japanese is not setting the world on fire, you know, and your degree in history is not setting the world on fire. So that means you can't get any high level English teaching jobs at the beginning. Of course, everyone can work up to that. So I would say, is it too late? No, but if you're a single guy and hey, living in Japan's your dream, hey, make it happen. That's awesome. But if you got two little young ones that also need food, and your wife that needs food, and you got to pay your rent and stuff, then you got to start thinking, right? I mean, is it too late? No, of course it's not too late, but it's just...
You're way more practical.
Yeah, I mean, it's just follow your dreams all the time. But I think you got to think really long and hard. I mean, glass ceiling, there's not a glass ceiling, but it's definitely a plastic one, you know? And even the highest heights of employment aren't that great. Of course, there's these stories of you could make a YouTube channel like I'm being here. That's an option, right? But the literally more common routes, the top is not that very high, right? And
See, this is the difference between you and I, that you have a very different perspective on Japan. You have a family, you have a wife, you have children. I'm a single person here, so I didn't think about that. As a 44-year-old married man with children, he wants to support his family on this. He doesn't want to live in a room with no windows like me. Then
Maybe it's a little different. Working at Walmart in Japan, I mean, America, will pay you more than your entry level in Japan. I mean, that's just the fact of the matter. And if you work at some place, you get benefits and stuff too. So, you know, you got to think about what it is. I always think like your love of Japan has to be higher than all the crap that you have to deal with in the employment side of things, right? So if your love of Japan is so great that you don't care being like I'm living in a closet, I don't know the size. You said no windows. I think it's fair. So living in a small place, you know, and, you know, maybe you have to commute 2 hours to work and stuff. If your love of Japan is greater than all those negatives, then hey, then you got to go, right? What else can you say? But if it's not, then you got to think long and hard, right?
Exactly. Yep.
I mean, I hate to tell people don't to do something when they want to do it, but you got to think. I mean, what's your long-term goal? And teaching long-term is something you can do. Of course, there's great jobs, but they're getting fewer and farther between. And of course, if you don't have a degree in education, you don't have a master's degree, then you're pretty far away from those as we speak. So that's the email of the week. Not very positive. I'll try to find a more positive one next time. But you can send those to me, altinsiderfy@gmail.com, and I can get those. Maybe you'll have more questions next time. But that will wrap up this first edition here with Anming as co-host.
Woohoo!
How do you feel? How do you feel that went?
I think it was good. I think we should make this a thing.
Yeah, I'd say it really felt like we talked for like 5 minutes, and we have talked way much more than 5 minutes. So that's a good sign for me. But that is it, my friends. I will sign off here. I'm M. James. She is Anming. And of course, follow all her stuff. All your links to her YouTube or Instagram, all that stuff is going to be on the website. And we'll see you in the future for sure. Anming, final words?
For sure. I'm looking forward to working with you, James. This is going to be fun. I don't know if you know what you've done here. You might regret it.
Maybe so.
I'm just joking. All
right, guys. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
I really hope you enjoyed today's Inside Japan podcast. Dive deeper into our world and learn more about what awaits you. Check out altinsider.com. And for regular, up-to-the-minute job postings, check into jobsinjapan.com for the next big gig. Please tune in for our regular excursions into the world of Japan, and good luck! Gambatte! Jobs in Japan.